Come with me now into the swirling mists of human inadequacy.
Philip Lamar, the creator of Star Ark, passed away last year. He left the other members of the cast money and expensive gifts. But to me, he left something far more precious. A ball of string and a message. Lionel, if you let this out behind you as you follow me to the grave, you may retrace your steps, and then I'll never have to see your face again. It was a kind thought, Philip. But even string can't save us from death. Tonight, we will find out what Philip Lamar already knows. What happens to us when we die? Join me, if you dare, in this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World! And please welcome your Sherpas on the nursery slopes of the strange...
I'm Stuart Lee.
And I'm known as Richard Herring.
Death, love it or hate it, you just can't avoid it.
Rich and poor, high and humble, fat and thin, Greek and Welsh. Death's icy thumbs eventually poke us all.
Bearing witness to his dread power are both Julius Caesar and Arthur Askey.
The Reaper's Scythe has claimed, amongst others, Kafkaesque novelist Franz Kafka. And Little House on the Prairie's Michael Landon.
Perkin Warbeck, pretender to the throne of Henry VII, musician the Big Bopper, Florence Nightingale, all the good ones off Dad's army, and Nigel Kennedy are just a few of those who have shuffled off this mortal coil.
It was James Bond author Ian Fleming who said, "You only live twice." However, Ian was mistaken. In actual fact, you only live once.
But what happens to us when we die? For example, was Arthur Askey's physical death the end of his cheerful brand of family entertainment? Is he to this day still bringing a chuckle to the lips of the choir invisible? Or has his soul reincarnated in a new physical form, perhaps ironically as a busy, busy bee? By the end of the show, we will know.
Now, a lot of pop stars live fast and died young.
So, can the lyrics of pop songs give us any clues to what happens to us when we die?
Live and let die.
Hello, everybody. I'm a dead man. But I'm not even 6 feet underground.
I'm the best one. Beagle. Knock, knock, knock.
I don't know who you are, but you're a real dead ringer for love.
Oh, the Deadwood stages are rolling on over the plains. With the curtains snapping and the driver is slapping the reins.
Well, clearly not. But if we could prove we have a soul, we would be certain that death is not the end.
And so, over here in this part of the studio, we're joined by Mr. Ralph Griffiths of Solihull in the West Midlands. Doctors have informed Mr. Griffiths that due to a rare incurable disease, he's going to very unfortunately die in the next 30 minutes, which is bad news for Mr. Griffiths, but rather good news for us.
Hello, Mr. Griffiths. How are you?
Well, I'm feeling rather poorly, actually.
Oh, yes, of course. Now, Mr. Griffiths has kindly consented to take part in a scientific experiment to determine whether, at the point of death, any soul or soul-type thing will leave his body. Are you sure this is okay, Mr. Griffiths?
Oh, yes, of course. If it can be of any help. I've had a good innings, you know.
All right, then. Well, as the audience can see, at the moment of Mr. Griffiths' death, the soul, if there is such a thing, will ascend through this long, curly glass pipe, through these bell jars, and up here, into this large polythene bag. Here it'll be trapped by these specially designed green lights for analysis by us.
And how do these green lights work, Rich?
Well, I got the idea from that Ghostbusters film, you know. They've got those green laser-type things. Are you okay, Mr. Griffiths?
Oh, don't worry about me, Mr. Herring. It all sounds very interesting and worthwhile. I'd be at home myself, tuning in on the old wireless, if it were well enough.
That's really very kind of you, Mr. Griffiths. Perhaps after the show, you'd like to join me for a drink? Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, we'll be returning to the experiment to be in at the death, so to speak.
But what form does death take? He's traditionally seen as a man with a scythe.
But how could a single grim reaper be responsible for harvesting all the lives of all the doomed souls on planet Earth?
Well, to find out, in the studio today, we have a professional agricultural reaper, Kathy Chick. For the past 5 hours, Cassie's been standing in this soil-filled tray here, reaping some grass we planted earlier. Cathy, how do you feel?
Well, after a relatively short time reaping, my arm is very tired and I need a rest and a drink of milk or squash. And remember, reaping grass is a lot easier than reaping people. As a professional reaper myself, I would say no reaper could do all that alone. Although the strain of the excessive workload might explain his grim demeanor.
Thank you, Cathy.
Can I stop reaping now?
Yeah.
Is that all you wanted to know?
Yeah.
Darn.
Cass's conclusions tie in with those of the psychic surfer of the astral plane, Timothy Munnery, who claims that in a drug-induced state, he voyaged into the bowels of hell itself. In his book, The Armada First Book of Ghosts, Armada 1992, he describes witnessing the school where the Grim Reaper teaches trainee deaths their trade.
Right, you three. I've had it.
Yes, Mr. Reaper.
Didn't go too well, did it?
No, Mr. Reaper.
So, Cosgrave, I sent you out in the traditional death coach to collect the 30 cases of food poisoning from the Happy Apples old folks' home. Let's have a look at your video, shall we?
This isn't the way to paint them.
Shut up, you old hag. Can't you read? Do not distract the driver.
Where's Ted, our usual driver? He's not vulgar and unfriendly like you. And he's not a skeleton.
Look, Grandad. This isn't a holiday coach bound for painting. This is the death coach, and you're all going to hell.
Well, let's have a sing-song, then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My old man's ship below the bed.
Shut up! No singing!
Can we stop at the next services? I've run out of Everton mints and Doris needs the oxy-doo lardy.
Look, I've got a bloody schedule.
Well, it's not us who have to clean the seats.
All right, I'll stop here. Leicester Forest East. Now, back in 5 minutes, or I'm going without you.
Come on, one leg it!
For God's sake, Cosgrave, that's the oldest trick in the book. And you're meant to be the Grim Reaper, not the Grumpy Reaper. Repeat after me, all of you. I am death, and I claim your soul.
I am death, and I claim your soul.
Pathetic. And Mallet, what about Mr. Newbold? It was a simple heart attack.
Oh, dear. I feel all funny, Barbara.
Are you all right, Keith?
I am death.
Watch out.
Oh, this is a flat road thing. It's a bit long for me.
Mind what you're doing with that side. You'll hurt someone.
I'll put it down.
Barbara!
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I meant to kill you, not her. Oh, dear. I am a dafty.
And, Richardson, what about Mr. Ken Pebble and his bizarre shopping accident?
Well, I knew he liked vegetables and that, so I decided to lure him.
Hello, I've not seen this grocer shop before. Is it new?
Yes, it is, Mr. Pebble. Come in.
Well, what have you got on offer, then?
Aubergines or death?
Death?
Death.
Aubergines?
Yes.
Well, I'll have the aubergines, please.
Oh, all right, 76 pence.
Goodbye.
Bum.
I like what you were trying there, Richardson, but you made the mistake of offering him a choice, didn't you?
Sorry.
You're all crap. Now get out there and try again. Honestly, they'll be the death of me.
So, if Munnery's vision is to be believed, death takes the form of a person. But due to a heavy workload, like Father Christmas, he has his helpers.
Is it possible to rise again after death's side has claimed us? Some people believe that physical death is simply a type of very deep sleep, and given the right conditions, we can revive and live on. Now, like me, you might say, is that a load of rubbish, or what? But the resurrectionists might counter that with, well, what of Lazarus, or even Jesus Christ?
And those skeletons in Jason and the Argonauts. You know, the ones with the swords. But are any of these cases true? Did Jesus Christ, for example, really rise from the dead?
Well, Richard, we're not allowed to speculate over such an important matter. Some things are meant to remain mysterious. But having said that, ancient scrolls recently discovered in a cave by the Red Sea have caused controversy and debate. Here's an extract.
Thomas, Thomas, Christ is risen!
Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and touch his wounds, I will not believe.
Thomas, it is I! Stop doubting and believe!
My Lord and God!
Hold it right there!
Oh no! It's the Scooby-Doo gang!
Shraggy!
Yep, that's right, and like we've seen through this cunning ruse, this isn't as it seems Jesus Christ risen from the dead to haunt us all, but behind this ingeniously realistic latex mask, it is in fact...
Charlie the Caretaker!
Yes, that's right. I used the crucifixion of an ordinary man in order that I could come back as a ghouly ghost.
Zoinks!
In the hope that I could establish a religion that would spread across the Western world, causing the collapse of the Roman Empire and endless centuries of war and schism. And I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for you pesky meddling kids.
Charlie, your days of villainy are over.
Woo! Woo!
Oh, no!
Woo.
It's the real Jesus Christ!
Woo! Woo! Woo!
No, no, this time it's just Scooby!
Scooby-Dooby-Doo!
Now, Stu, you know as well as I do that those scrolls, the so-called Gospel according to Saint Shaggy, were a fake. They were nothing but a shoddy publicity stunt by Hanna and Barbera to try and revive flagging interest in the critically panned all-new Scooby and Scrappy-Doo show.
I apologise, Richard. There is no room for falsehood in this programme, and I am a fool. Someone a bit easier to kill is Mr. Griffiths. Let's see how he's getting on. Mr. Griffiths, are you dead yet?
No, Stuart. Mr. Griffiths is still bravely holding in there.
You know, it's funny. At the end of it all, you can't help looking back at the good times. I was just thinking about the Stratford-upon-Avon Canal, where I used to play as a child.
Oh, I know that stretch of water. It flows into central Birmingham. It's a very popular leisure waterway.
Yes, but I prefer to remember the waterway as a working one. The plodding of the beautiful Shire horses, the river people on their barges, all heading for a common destination. Birmingham. It was a wonderful scene. I wonder if they'll have canals where I am going.
What, in that polythene bag? No, I doubt it, mate.
You never know, Mr. Griffiths. One day, science may find a cure for death itself.
Yeah, well, not in the next 10 minutes, though, eh, Rich?
But is there some form of heaven or hell providing us with everlasting life after our death? Religious people all agree there has to be, but are constantly fighting wars with each other over exactly what it looks like and what kind of decorations it has. Christians believe that death is only the beginning of life. They are wrong, of course. Birth is the beginning of life. And death is in many ways the end.
Buddhists believe that only thin people will die. And it's a central tenet of their faith that the believer must try to eat so much food that he'll be too fat to pass through the door of death.
The national religion of Japan, Wang, believes that the afterlife will take the form of a small cubicle full of American beer and with a video screen showing continuous film of blonde Western girls in hot four-way action.
Even today in superstitious Catholic France, it is common practice for sick, old people to cover themselves in the feces and urine of farm animals and children, in the hope that the smell will keep death away. Ironically, this practice only contributes to their ill health. But not all afterlife religious philosophies are as pleasant as that of Japan.
Increasingly nowadays, otherwise sensible people are beginning to believe that after they die, their soul will return in a dog or goat. The term reincarnation literally means incarnating again.
It's a philosophy shared by many peoples, the Greeks, the Hindus, the Red Indians, and old blokes in pubs who start talking to you when you're just trying to have a quiet drink with your friends.
But is there any evidence? Over to Wendy Leafley.
Outside, this Uxbridge house looks like a typical quiet suburban dwelling. But whilst the neighbouring accountants and surveyors sit down for dinner, at number 32, the blinds are drawn for an orgy.
By Jupiter, Brutus, Rome is very beautiful today.
Yes, Julius Caesar, the summer of 54 BC will go down in history as a real scorcher.
Good. Now bend over that table.
But there's no need to call in Mary Whitehouse, because this orgy took place over 2,000 years ago. Norris and Bernice Flynn and their friends are members of the South Uxbridge Reincarnation Club, a society for people who believe they have all met before in past lives as their souls pass on to different bodies through all human history, and who live in the South Uxbridge area.
Every Friday, Bernice puts us all into a state of regressive hypnosis, and the inhibitions of our Uxbridge lives fade away as we dress up in fancy costumes and act out our past lives with the other husbands and wives.
Great.
Last week I was Toulouse-Lautrec, and Bernice was my disobedient maid. It was amazing. Although she's never done French, under hypnosis, she was very good at it.
It's interesting. In each life, you tend to have the same basic group of friends. It's only their names, faces and personalities that are different.
Which is nice, because you don't have to worry about losing touch.
But why do we reincarnate?
Each of our lives balances our karma. If you do something bad in one life, then something equally bad will happen to you in a later life.
For example, in 1837, Norris accidentally shortchanged me in the Windmill Inn in Clapham. So, tonight he must be tied up, gagged and whipped.
Yes, and don't forget I stole some jam in 4th century China.
Norris, you are wicked. I'll have to use the table tennis bat as well now.
Oh dear. Oh!
If there is anyone in the South Uxbridge area who is interested in reincarnation and who thinks they might recognise me or Norris from a previous life, then get in touch. But couples only, please, and they must be broad-minded.
Many dead people return to the world in ghost form to complete business they left unfinished in their lives. Ted Wilding White's seminal book, Mysteries of the Unknown, Monsters, Ghosts and UFOs, Usborne, 1977, details one such case.
For several months, Will and Bexy Gallagher of Kenilworth were pestered by the troubled spirit of Elizabethan courtier Simon de Montfort, an earlier resident of their attractive Tudor cottage.
Will! Will, look, it's the ghost is back again!
I am Simon de Montfort!
Oh, God, spirit, we charge thee! Why'd you wander the corridors of our home night after night, your face racked with anguish and worry?
I cannot leave my old home until I have done those things which I left undone. I have a terrible secret. On the day I died...
Yes, what?
Well, I think I left the gas on. I'm not sure. I was halfway to paradise, you know, and I thought, oh, hang it. Did I or didn't I? I had to come back and check. You know what it's like.
It's all right, spirit. The gas is off.
Oh, what a relief. You must think me a terrible fool. I'd forget my head if it wasn't under my arm.
Yeah, well, can you just go now and leave us alone, huh?
Actually, there is one other thing that I left unfinished. I always wanted to build a little extension on the back of the house, you know.
An extension?
Yes, a sort of sun veranda with garden furniture and a glass roof.
All right, we'll do it. Anything for peace.
Good. Then there's my unfinished novel. I had a sort of idea about a sort of ordinary young bloke. The problems he has, you know.
We'll find a room for you to work in. Then will you please go?
Well, I always wanted to go to Disneyland. And I never did get to see the Wishbone Ash live. But ghosts like Simon aren't the only possible proof of an afterlife.
Yeah, on May the 24th this year, the News of the World magazine asked, "Is there life after death? Meet the people who know." And we saw it and thought, that's handy. Inside, there were almost two entire pages of case histories of people who'd had near-death experiences.
Al Sullivan, 61, who nearly died during heart surgery, said he saw a grim reaper in a smoky darkness. Jamie Unterman, a little girl who nearly died when she was five, saw three angels. And Jesus, who was sitting on a log. He was very nice, says Jamie. And it's good to know that they have logs in the afterlife. Especially if you fancy a sit-down, because you get a bit tired being dead.
Shame for Al, though, seems to have got a raw deal there with his horrible Grim Reaper and no log. especially if you then take a look at the little wax crayon drawing 5-year-old Jamie has done of her afterlife experience, in which Jesus is wearing an attractive blue plastic mac. And has had his bright ginger hair styled up into a kind of beehive. It does indeed seem very nice.
But can we talk to the dead without having to go to the bother of dying ourselves?
Ouija boards are seen by some as the channel of communication with the spirit world. But dabbling in this black art is said to threaten life and soul and end in physical and mental damage. But we're not afraid to take such risks to find out the truth, are we, Richard?
What? I'm not doing it. It's evil. My sister's friend's friend did it and went mad and died. Why can't you do it?
Well, I've got a sore ear.
Oh, dear. I see. Well, over in this part of the studio, we've set up a giant Ouija board with a big glass in the middle so that the whole audience can join in with the experiment. We've scientifically recreated all the conditions for a Ouija session. We've plied the audience with alcohol, passed round a couple of spliffs, told that story about the old granny with the hairy hands and the axe, and cruelly taunted anyone who says the occult is against their religion. Right, rest your fingers on the glass, everyone, but no pushing. It's working. SORRYWERE. Sorry, we're NOTIN, not in. But leave your message and we'll get back to you. Beep. Oh.
Well, there you go. The BBC would like to remind small children that there is nothing clever or big about experimenting with the occult. But it's a good laugh if you've had a few and there's nothing on the telly.
And as per usual, we need just one more piece of information. So over to Peter Fenn for Peter Fenn's Hammond Organ Believe It or Not file.
Believe it or not, this week I've got two Believe It or Nots for you. But that just gives us more time to hear this lovely Hammond organ tune. Now then, believe it or not, the Tibetan Book of the Dead isn't, as you might imagine, a telephone directory type list of all the people who have died in Tibet, but is in fact a guide to transcendental meditation. And, believe it or not, if all the people who have died in all history were to stand on the Isle of Wight, they would scare away all the tourists. Seriously damaging the island's fragile economy.
Thanks, Peter. And this week's Hammond organ music was?
It was The Entertainer, Richard. I'd have thought you'd have recognised it. It's quite well known.
And who's it by?
Oh, Richard, it's by Mr. Ragtime himself, Scott Mr. Ragtime Joplin. You can keep your Bay City Rollers for me and many others. Mr. Ragtime Joplin is still the entertainer. Literally.
Well, Mr. Griffiths, we've had Peter Fenn now, so that's the end of the show, and you seem to be still here, not really dead in any sense of the word.
Yes, it's a bit embarrassing. I have tried.
Perhaps if I give you a bit of a shock or a good kicking...
That's a kind thought, Mr. Lee. But I'm actually feeling a lot better. All these people and the excitement seem to have perked me up a bit.
You're feeling better?
I have Mr. Herring to thank. Our little chat about canals. It reminded me of how much I used to enjoy things. Rachel says illness is all in the mind, and I think she's right.
I'm so glad. Shall we undo the straps?
Well, I am pleased, Mr. Griffiths. I mean, you did promise to come on the show and die for us, but you mustn't feel under any kind of obligation.
Oh, I'm sure we could work out some kind of compromise.
No, you're the important one. I mean, if you had died and the experiments had worked, then all of humanity would have known if there was such a thing as a human soul, but at least now we all know about canals, don't we?
Perhaps, Stuart, we found the answer anyway.
What are you on about?
All I know, Stuart, is that when Mr. Griffiths came in here today, he was a weak, tired old man on the verge of death. And now he's still a weak, tired old man, but he feels a bit better. And he's made a new friend. Right, Ralph?
Yes, Richard.
And if that doesn't prove the existence of a soul, I don't know what does.
Well, nice theory, Richard, but despite your pronouncements, I understand we're getting something through on the Ouija board.
Yeah. It says, although you didn't leave a message, Richard, we know it was you, and because you've dabbled in what you don't understand, Richard, you must pay. Well, what does that mean?
Rich, are you all right?
The one you call Rich is not here. I am a she-demon from beyond the grave and have possessed his body to use as I will.
Oh, I'll be sorry you missed that. Never mind. Presumably, you could answer our question then. What happens to us when we die?
Yes, I can. When you die, you are given a choice of two things. You can either spend eternity with your dead relatives, or sign up for work in the Ouija board department and spend the rest of forever pushing a glass about for some drunk teenagers. I tell you, it's not much fun.
Well, thanks very much for answering that one. You've got a very distinctive voice, haven't you?
You think so?
Yeah, you sound really like an old girlfriend of mine, actually. Well, a mother, anyway.
Oh, yes.
So, what's your name, then, she-demon from beyond the grave?
It's Jane. Jane Stevens.
Do you have to go back to hell now, or what?
No, but if I stay in Richard's body, his spirit will remain trapped in a terrifying astral wilderness between life and death.
Ah. Well, I know a nice restaurant just around the corner, actually. Did you have anywhere to stay in London?
Saucy, you're a fast one. I know your game.
Yeah, you've seen through me, haven't you? You know, I think I could probably get over the fact that you look exactly like Rich.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be back next time for more of those big questions answered. See you then.
Right, I'll get a taxi. Come on.
So now we know what happens to us when we die, which is useful. The great bard expresses it more clearly than ever I, or even Philip Lamar could, in Hamlet's final words. The rest is silence. But in that rest, what dreams may come? Join me, Lionel Nimrod, again here in my inexplicable world.
Inexplicable World was performed by Richard Herring, Stuart Lee, Rebecca Front and Armando Iannucci, with Tom Baker as Lionel Nimrod. It was written by Stuart Lee and Richard Herring and produced from Beyond the Grave by Sarah Smith.
Sadly, after the recording of this programme, Mr. Ralph Griffiths, the elderly man from Solihull in the West Midlands, died on his way home from the studio. A polythene bag containing a mysterious, foul-smelling green gas found at the scene of Mr. Griffiths' death was thrown away by the police for reasons of hygiene. And now on Radio 4, it's time...
I am Death... Whoops.
What's going on? Careful with that side.
Where is everyone? I've come for... Can you read this handwriting? Ralph Griffiths.
Ralph Griffiths.
Yeah, is he here?
No, they've all gone. Anyway, he's already dead.
Oh, dear. He was on my list, though.
And now on Radio 4, it's... Ah! You hit me! Ah!
Oh, sorry. It slipped.
Ah! I die.
Oh, dear. And now on... Radio, is that a four there? I don't know. Oh, sorry.